So that clip was a little over a minute long, and she's a quilt maker, an airplane flyer, a jump rope counter, and a paint picker. And that just didn't even cover all the other things that she probably did throughout the day because, well, moms are indeed busy, responsible people. And we do want to say happy Mother's Day. And just so you know, we don't even have to take a special trip for Mother's Day because our sermon series that we've been doing about the zoo, well, we're just going to continue right on through the zoo. And if you think about it, we've been going through this little board that's out here. This was the zoo map that I hung up the very first week. We finished the four predators that are out there and those big things that seem to attack our lives and work from the outside in. And last week we started talking about the things that work from the inside out, that thing, those things that get into our life and just kind of mull through it and cause us a problem. And because we are in the zoo, we have the built-in character that we can take today. We are going to talk about the bear. And I would like to thank Patty Sharp for providing our bear. And because Patty Sharp provided that bear, you notice he's all dressed for church. He has his necktie on, and he's all ready to go. See, Patty, sorry, I don't own one still. Well, I own two, one for weddings, one for funerals. But anyway, we're going to put bear in the cage this morning, and we're going to use the bear as kind of our topic to begin discussing about Mother's Day. So let's talk about the bear first. The bear has two layers of fur. Maybe you didn't know that. A short layer to keep the bear warm and a long layer that keeps the water away from the skin and the short fur. Bears are very smart, have been known to roll rocks into bear traps to set off the traps so they can take the bait safely. Only the polar bear is a true carnivore. All other bears are omnivores. And unlike many mammals, bears can see color. A swimming polar bear can jump 8 feet out of the water to surprise a seal. Note to self, around a polar bear, don't dress like a seal. A polar bear's stomach can hold 150 pounds of meat. If that sounds amazing, they don't have teenage sons. Koalas are bears, but koalas are not bears, but pandas are indeed true bears. Bears can see almost as well as humans. And they can hear a little bit better, but their smell is much better. In fact, a bear's sense of smell is 100 times greater than a human's. I have no idea how they figured this stuff out. But somebody got paid an awful lot of money to figure how well a bear can sniff something. A male bear is called a boar or a he-bear. A female bear is called a sow or a she-bear. And a group of bears is called a sleuth. I did not know that. Once a bear breeds, they go their separate ways. Male bears do not help the mother at all in the raising of cubs. Bears give birth to 2 or 3 blind, helpless cubs in midwinter and nurse them in the den until spring. When all emerge in search of food, the cubs will stay with their very protective mother for about 2 years. And just so you know, the Bible understands exactly how protective a mother bear is, because she's referenced 3 times in Scripture as the world's most fierce mom. 2 Samuel chapter 17, verse 8 says, "You will know your father and his men. They are fighters, and they are fierce as a wild bear robbed of her cubs." You want to make a mama bear angry? Try taking the cubs away from her. You'll know just how fierce she can be. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 12, Solomon knew how fierce these mama bears could be. "Better to meet a bear robbed of her cubs than a fool bent on folly." Again, mama bear is all about the cubs. Hosea chapter 13, 8. "Like a bear robbed of her cubs, I will attack them and rip them open." The worst place you can ever be is between a mama bear and her cubs. Because you know what? They are fiercely protective mothers who have a lot to do. And while they have a lot to do, every now and then they would like to have a day that's just kind of like this. Really? Go away, find something else to do, seriously. But you have to understand how dedicated these moms are because unlike most other animals, they have a language that the cubs speak to mom. And I didn't know this, but they all sound the same to me, but there are different noises that these cubs make, and mama bear knows exactly what to do. When the cub is being nursed, mother bear maintains the same position. However, crying underneath the mother, so he begins to cry, he says, "I'm hungry. I can't reach." So mother bear gets up and changes her position. A cub exposed to the cold will whimper in the den. And the mother uses the paw and the chin and her little mouth thing there to tuck the cub under to keep him warm. A cub in the cold snow will also whine outside, but unlike trying to roll them under because the ground is cold, the mother will give up her own comfort and roll on her back, exposing that long fur so that the cub can snuggle in to keep warm. A cooing cub that's separated from her mother, from its mother, well, the mother, believe it or not, will just kind of wait. A coo does not bring mother running because mother understands that, well, they have to learn to grow up at some point. But a yelling cub is separated from her mother, from its mother. Well, the mother grunts in concern and slowly wanders back toward the cub. But let that cub scream. And the mother feels the cub is in danger. The mother will come running and may even charge a human, even if they're carrying a weapon, and even an intruding bear, even an oversized male bear. You see, mother bear, she understands it's all about the cubs. And so today, as we are continuing through our zoo and we're talking about the mother bear, that this sermon really isn't. I always get reminded when the kids are going to get up here that I'm supposed to make the sermon kid-friendly. This isn't necessarily kid-friendly because this is kid-focused. You see, mother bear is all about the cubs, and as we begin to talk about this Mother's Day sermon, it's really all about moms and their cubs, because mom understands it's only for a few short 2 years of her life that she will get to do this. Eventually, her family will break up. The cubs and mom will go their separate ways. Interestingly enough, female cubs will stay roughly in the same territory. The males will wander far and wide away from Mama Bear. But Mama Bear understands that she has a mission. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6 says, "Start a child off in the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not depart from it." In those 2 short years that Mama Bear has those cubs, she has the responsibility to teach them everything that they need to know to survive out in the great big wide world. She has to teach them about danger, about climbing, about cleaning, about fishing, about hunting, about which berries are safe to eat and which ones aren't. This is not a safe berry to eat. Just want you to know that. I don't fit on their diet list, hopefully. But Mama Bear has all of these responsibilities because she understands eventually she wants to love them enough to let them grow. She wants to love her kids enough so at some point those cubs can go out into the world and do what bears do. Because that is the goal of Mother Bear. And so this morning we are going to talk about the ingredients for growing a child for God. And what better example to use than Jesus himself? And this is what we read in Luke chapter 2, verses 39 through 40. When Joseph and Mary had done everything required by the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee to their own town of Nazareth. And the child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was on him. So we don't get very many pictures of Jesus' childhood. As a matter of fact, we get the one when he's probably two-ish, when the wise men show up. We get the little snapshot of when he's in the temple and he's there preaching and teaching the people that are supposed to be in charge. We get that little snapshot when right after they go up to Egypt and he's not a baby. So we get those little snapshots, but we don't really know a lot about Jesus' childhood. As a matter of fact, this is the most in-depth verse that we get of what Jesus was like as a child. I often wonder what kind of teenager Jesus was. It would have been interesting. But I want you to see how God put the ingredients together to grow Jesus. Now, this is weird to me because Jesus is the Son of God. So I would have thought if there was ever a child that would have come with a ready-made package, he would have been it, right? I mean, just add water, shake, and he should have been good to go. But that's not how it worked. Even in the Son of God's life, he had to have the proper ingredients to help him grow, and it all began with committed parents. I want you to note how the verse starts. Dad Joseph, who by the way was not his real dad because he was the Son of God, so he was taking a role, an active role in a child's life that wasn't really his child, but Dad Joseph and Mom Mary started off with a commitment to do things God's way. We are not bears. We're people. And while today is Mother's Day and we honor moms and we realize how much investment that moms put into their children, we need to understand the healthiest environment for us to raise our kids is when there's a family surrounding them. And both of their family, their starter there, they were committed to God's path. I want you to know that it didn't say that they did some things that the law required. It says they did everything. They took care of their commitment to God before they began to take care of their commitment to their family. They understood if I'm going to have a family that is going to successfully grow children for God, it begins in the home. And that's interesting because they established a home life for Jesus. Specifically, they went to Galilee, the town of Nazareth. And why is that important? Because that's Mary's hometown. They're going to where Mary's family is. So this pulls in the idea that there was supposed to be a family environment that for Jesus to grow. That means he had grandma and grandpa and aunts and uncles and cousins and nieces and nephews and all of these influences in his life. Their family surrounded Jesus as he grew. Now, I like I said, I don't know what kind of child he was. I don't know if he was good at kickball. I don't know what he did. But we do understand the idea that he had a family that was involved around him. And just so you know, this was a family that listened to God. As you look through Scripture and we go back and we think about the Christmas story, yeah, the Christmas tree over there has nothing to do with that story. That's last week's sermon. You'll have to ask somebody that was here if you want to know what went on. So, or you can grab a CD. But as in our Christmas story, we understand the idea that Jesus was born and Jesus went back there and Jesus was growing. And we understand all of those things that happened with him. But you know what? We also understand how many times an angel showed up and said to Mary or Joseph, do this or do that. And what did they do? They did this and they did that. They did exactly what they were told to do because this was a family that listened to God. And this was a family that was just not a home. It was a family that worshiped God. Verse 31, and I was reading there in chapter 2 of Luke, it says, every year Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. Now remember, they're in a Jewish tradition, so this isn't saying church is once a year thing. Okay, but you have to understand that they were in a Jewish tradition, and they were in a Jewish religion, and it was a time of the year, every year, when you had to go down to Jerusalem to worship this particular festival, and it says that they were there every single year. Every single year, they would pack up the donkey or whatever they would have, and they would load the diaper bag on, and they would put it all together, and they would trudge their way all the way down from Nazareth to Jerusalem so that they could honor God and worship God at this time of the festival when they would basically offer a sacrifice for their sins. What an interesting picture. It was a picture of sacrifice for the world. And every single year, he went and watched this picture laid out before him. See, this is a family that had made a commitment in their home. This was a family that had made a decision. As for me and my house, we will worship the Lord. This is a family that decided we are going to do things God's way, no matter what the cost. No matter what it took. They were given this responsibility. Here's the interesting thing. Remember, we're not talking about 30-some-year-old parents here. If you go back and you look at Jewish history or Jewish tradition, these guys are probably 13, 14, 15 years old. This kind of a responsibility. And they made the commitment. So that means if you went just by the way it works, that means by the time that Jesus is 30, then we're talking about Mary being in her 40s, so she spent her entire younger part of her life giving up, sacrificing, doing for Jesus. And here's the good news. The child grew. That's what the verse said, right? He didn't stay a little cub. I mean, we love the baby in the manger. We celebrate it every year. We put the manger scene outside. We put the manger here. We have it in our house. We love the manger scene. But you do understand that is but a snapshot. Jesus didn't go from being baby to 30 years old. There was this whole long process that went through, and Jesus grew just like any other child. That means at some point he probably had to have a diaper change. Hopefully. At some point he probably skipped days. At some point he probably struggled with teenage. Oh, by the way, can I let you know a little something? I had a proud papa moment. When I said I was doing the bear Mother's Day, my son said, you can't do that. You are not.
like, yeah, you got to be headed to the movie called Brave, where the mama gets turned into a bear. And he was so sure that's where we're going. He said, you did that 3 years ago. Now, you want to know why I'm so proud? Anytime a teenager remembers something I said 3 years ago, I'm excited. So he remembered and he reminded me. So this isn't about that. But you do understand, he did not stay a cub. This little child grew. And it gives us specifically how he grew. It says he grew physically. He went from being a little baby to toddler to moving about to teenager to a young adult. He went through all of that. He grew physically. And as he grew physically, his body changed and his physical needs changed. He didn't stay the way that he always was. And they had to go out and they had to go and do shopping and clothes shopping and decide, oh, you need a new pair of sandals because you've outgrown these. There's this song out there that wish they'd stay little till their carters wear out. I've got to let you know, that's a mama song. Because there is no dad that wants them to stay little till their carters wear out. He grew physically. We can't expect kids to stay little forever. So that means we need to make use of the time to realize they are not. Right now, we have captive audiences. They only go where we go because they don't have cars. Okay? They only do things that we do because we control the way. Use this time to nurture and grow them. We have to understand they're going to be changed. We have to prepare for those physical needs as they go. And they're going to grow mentally. At some point, my kids are going to be smarter than me. It's just going to happen. It says that Jesus increased in wisdom, which means wisdom means he gained some information. He also gained some experience, because that's really where wisdom comes from. It's one thing for me to tell you how to do something, but we have to be willing to have our kids experience things so they can gain some growth. I mean, you don't want your 30-year-old child to act like a 5-year-old. That's not what you want. You want them to grow and mature, and have them learn, and have them experience, have them go out and get a job, have them get out into the world, hopefully eventually have them meet their mate, and then they produce the next generation. That's the goal in every mom's eyes. And you have to realize that they're going to grow mentally. He's going to have to gain some godly skills and some life skills. He's going to have to learn obedience. And Jesus learned that. Remember the water and the wine? Mary came and he got Jesus and said, Jesus, they're all out of wine. And Jesus was like, what do you want me to do about it? She was like, forget it. Hey, guys, whatever you said to do, y'all do. And then she just walked away. Why? But she understood. Mom had made her request. And you did what Mama Bear wants. Mom had made a request, and Jesus turned the water into wine to feed the party that was going on. And that's all those things that we need to teach them when they're young. Remember, we only have them for a few short years, and then they're going to wander where they will go. He grew emotionally and spiritually. It says God's grace was on him, and he grew in his relationship with God. And again, this is something that I can't wrap my brain around necessarily, because again, he was the Son of God, and I just kind of think he came out knowing everything. But it says he had to grow into that. I mean, yeah, he was there in the temple at 12 preaching sermons, but you understand, he had to grow into his ministry. He had to grow emotionally and spiritually. As he grew, his relationships grew, not only with God. It grew with men. Verse 32 right there in Luke chapter 2, it says, and Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. So not only did he grow with God, he grew with mankind also. He established relationships with other people. He established relationships with other individuals of other different cultures. He had to learn all of this. And all of that was there. And you know who kind of had to sit there and wander and watch all of this? Her name was Mary. Go all the way back to the manger scene, and when she found out everything, and she watched. It just says Mary was pondering. Mary was a ponderer. She just kind of watched. She just kind of took it all in. And all of Jesus' life, everything Mary knew about it, she also would sit back and ponder. I wonder what's coming next. See, that's kind of what moms have to do. You have to love them enough to let them grow. And maybe you're wondering, what on earth does this have to do with this mirror that's sitting up in front of the sanctuary? Well, remember why we put the mirror up here, because when we started this new series, we wanted to let you know this is an evaluation series. We wanted you to look at your own life.
Look at how you are doing things in your life. Take a look into the mirror and decide, does what I'm doing match up with what God is doing? Remember, a mirror is important because a mirror is a mirror. It only shows what you put in front of it. If I go to this mirror, it looks the same as the mirror in the bathroom. If I go to that bathroom, that mirror to another, they all look the same unless somebody plays a trick and puts a funhouse mirror in front of me. But they all look the same. The only way to change the image of the mirror is change the person standing in front of me. And so you're probably wondering, what does this have to do with this particular thing? Well, I want you to turn, if you will, to Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 44. And I want you to look at the first image of the church. This is what it says. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe and many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with a glad, sincere heart, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people, and the Lord added to their numbers daily those who were being saved. You're probably thinking, okay, I still don't get it. What am I supposed to take out of this? Well, I want you to look at these words. They, everyone, anyone, all, and there. These were the words that described the early church, and you know what? When we see those words, they, everyone, anyone, all, there, then you understand those words included families as well as the kids. You see, we get this picture that the church just came out as this all-adult organization, and it really doesn't work that way because the early church, just like it is today, is made up of families. And those families have kids of different sizes, different shapes, different abilities, different skills, different challenges. They all were a little bit different. And you do understand that the church had a responsibility. That's our word for the day. The church has a responsibility first to the families, to the moms and dads. It's interesting when Paul starts writing a letter to Titus telling how to construct the church. One of the first things he tells him is, focus on your family. Have your older man talking to your younger man. By the way, that could go all the way down. But guess what? There's always something younger than you, always an older than you. I mean, I can make a line here and take the oldest guy and put him all the way down to the youngest guy. And they all go together because the idea is we're all supposed to be equal to the other. Then he does the same thing with the men. And he says, hey, look, you're supposed to let your older women minister to your younger women. We're supposed to be ministering to our family, helping our moms, helping our dads, providing a path for them. And it says we're also supposed to be ministering to their kids. How are we supposed to minister to the kids? Well, just take a look at the Jesus model. We're supposed to minister to them physically. To provide a safe location for our youth to grow physically. We need to understand that when we get the newborn babies, they don't stay babies forever. Wouldn't it be nice if you put them right there and they just stay there forever? Not really. Because you know what? That would be old. So we have to prepare that as those kids grow, they move from one section to another. And the church has the responsibility to begin to put things in place physically for these kids as they grow. We're supposed to have a responsibility to minister to them mentally. To provide engaging lessons that will help the youth grow mentally, both in their knowledge for God and life skills. The church has a responsibility in this issue to come alongside families and provide for them a sound biblical education for their kids. To put things in place that will challenge students to learn something new and to take that and apply it into their life and not just make it information that they maybe want a Jeopardy category. We want families to put into action exactly what they're learning. We're supposed to be there for them emotionally. Provide an environment where they don't feel like a burden, but a blessing. See, when we're dealing with kids, it says we're supposed to love them. That means make a commitment to them. That means show them compassion. It means that we're supposed to encourage them. The kids need a lot of encouragement. I mean, they really do. Sometimes they need it in the positive side, well done. And sometimes they need it in the forceful side, get moving. But we're supposed to be there as a church body to
come alongside these families and encourage them. We have to be willing to support our families as they stand, because this is hard work, raising cubs. And it isn't interesting in the one snapshot that we get of Jesus in his younger years. It's all there. Mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Jesus being a spiritual guide. You know what? Kids are sitting around the sanctuary this morning. They're going to be involved. It's our responsibility as a church, as we look in the mirror, to provide a clear path for them, the kids, to establish and grow a relationship with God. So as you look in the mirror, how do you think we're doing? When it comes to the cubs that God has entrusted to our sleuth, that's a fun word to say, to our sleuth, to our group, how are we doing? Are we supporting our families? Are we supporting our kids? Or are we kind of like, yeah, we have to have an opinion about kids, and the opinion needs to come from exactly how Jesus thought about it. Did you know Jesus was a kid-focused person? I mean, I got a feeling this is the reason that Jesus did so many object lessons and so many things, and he did kind of strength, because he was really interested in kids, and they struggled in the early part of his ministry because of his interest in kids. In Matthew chapter 19, verse 14, we get this particular verse. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." Now, there's a word that just kind of sticks out there, and it's the word hinder. And if you go and you look up the word hinder in the dictionary, these are all the adjectives that they put next to the word hinder to cause delay, interruption, difficulty, hamper, impede, prevent from doing, acting or happening, stop, to be an obstacle. And Jesus looked at his disciples and said, "Look, these kids, they're not a burden. They're a blessing. And we should do nothing to hinder them from growing physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. As a matter of fact, not only are we not supposed to hinder, we're supposed to be helping." This is what he says in Matthew chapter 18, verses 2 through 5. He says, "Make it a priority." He being Jesus, called. Now, that word is interesting because my kids are used to be called. And how I call them, you usually decide whether or not they want to answer. Usually if my voice is gruff and loud, like, they're inventorying their life. What did I get to do? What have I done that I wasn't supposed to do? Okay? Or maybe I call and they go, "Oh, yeah, that's right around 5:36. That's got to be the different call. Okay, or maybe it's because they know I'm home and I've been on a trip and I got back and I called. They're not even going to make it. Okay, so when you call somebody, there are different ways to call them, but Jesus is calling. He said, he called the little children to him. He said, "Come, get out of their way. Open the path. Let them come straight to me." And he placed the little child among them. Wow. He's going to give them an object lesson. He's the little child. And he said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children." Notice he didn't say become childish. Okay, become like little children. He's after something. "You will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." Jesus made children a priority in his ministry because he understood they're the first character. They're the places that we pour our resources into because they are not our tomorrow, they are our today. And Jesus knew it. And he understood the idea that, you know what, we have to call to them. We have to build something that they're going to be interested in, because you know what, we can all learn a lot from a child. I do every single time I talk to one. I learn something new every single time. Because you know what, when you watch a child, their faith is so simple. It's not very complicated. They just kind of get the basics and they run with it. They don't have to have everybody tell them all the theological reasons that something works. Sure, I can accept that, and they just move. And it says, Jesus says, that's the attitude that you got to have. And where do you learn it? You learn it from kids. You learn it from watching kids that they come and they learn something and they're just so excited to come home and tell you what they learned.
call them into those moments. Love those moments. And then, I told you last week that when Jesus talked about things, sometimes he kind of like really got blunt. And then he puts the warning label to go with this. If you choose that you don't want to have children, you don't want to help the children, this is what he says. Pay really close attention, because these are not my words. Matthew chapter 18, verse 6 says, if anyone, absolutely anyone, anybody out there, causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble. So in other words, if you hinder, that word stumble, if you put in an obstacle, if you say stop, if you don't allow them to come toward Jesus when they're willing, it says, it would be better off for them to have tied a millstone. So you understand, that's a great big stone wheel that had a hole in it. They would take two stones and they would use them to grind together and turn wheat into flour. So it would be better off if you took a millstone and hung it around your neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. Now, I don't swim, but I got a sneaky suspicion diving in the water with a millstone is not a good move, because I sink naturally with that much weight. You're going to sink. But you understand, that's what Jesus put the priority on the kid. He said, by the way, if you become a hindrance, if you become a stumbling block, if you want to use him to get in the way, if you become an obstacle, it would be better off if you dive into the water with confidence in your shoes than to get in the way of the child. Jesus understands that we need to listen to Mother Bear. Mother Bear knows best.